Boom! What's up, familia? I'm the uncanny Dayspring.
I'm the adjectiveless Flinkman.
I finally get to be your favorite Canadian on the podcast, Sudbury and Ladd.
And I'm the Super X Luigi.
Does! And we have assembled today to meet my X-Men because we are discussing X-Men 97, the first two episodes. And I know Luigi's reaction because we went to the premiere together.
Yeah, y'all were there. It was amazing.
We were just eating popcorn, like stuffing our faces.
Paul was screaming the whole time.
I was.
So, Flink, did you feel like me that day that you were the only person in the entire like Instagram sphere that was not at this event?
Yeah, I felt. You know, I was pretty sad. I would have. I had FOMO for real. But I'm glad that friends were in the building for sure.
It was,
that's so nice. I'm like so
bitter. I'm very diplomatic. Like, yeah. That's the one thing. You know, I mean, listen, what am I going to say? I had my own stuff going on that day. I wouldn't be able to make it, even if I had an invitation.
I was going to say, you were a little busy yourself.
I mean,
I'm sorry, who were you hanging out with again? I'm sorry.
I mean, Neil Gaiman. Yeah. Oh, Gaiman. Not exactly okay. X-Men associated, but nerd legend, obviously. So, I enjoyed living vicariously through you guys. I mean, it looked like an incredible event.
Yeah, I mean, when Luigi and I were going to the back bar, the bar by the pool, we ran into Jennifer Hale, and I think I lost my shit. I was like, God Queen! And you could just tell she knew it. She responded to God Queen.
She's like, I have no idea what you're referencing, but yes, that is me.
But she,
Catherine Disher
I'll take
gave
it.
Her a heads
I'll
up.
Take it.
She was like, I'll take it. I didn't see Catherine Disher wasn't there, was she, Luigi? No.
No. I didn't see her.
No, neither was Allison Seeley Smith. At least I didn't see Allison Seeley Smith either. Mm-hmm. It was kind of sad. But we were going towards the pool and we saw Jennifer Hale and she was very sweet. She's here like, oh, I know Power of X-Men. I was like, then you're coming on the podcast right now.
Please.
Yes. She's actually kidnapped in the background of Dayspring's video right now. Help me.
Help.
She's in the closet.
With Fonka.
We started drinking early. Luigi, what time did you get to the Rose Valley?
I got there at 3.
Yeah, like 3-ish. Yeah. And the premiere was something at like 5. And we started, this bitch right here can down like Aperol spritzes like no other. I'm here like with 5 glasses of vodka, but you just kept going on those spritzes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a special occasion.
So who is worse by the end of the night?
I think we're pretty equal.
I mean, I wouldn't say equal. Obviously, Paul.
I mean, let's be real. Is that even a true question?
Where did we go? Wait, what's the name of that bar afterwards?
Scum and Villainy. It's like a Star Wars themed bar. That was fun.
It was. And I was just like, one more drink, one more drink. And
which
they were
ended
like,
up like 3 more drinks. But
of course it did.
But were they real drinks? Because Dayspring has a habit of like pretending to drink, ordering himself water, and making you drink more.
Shady!
No, you saw me drinking all
No, we actually ended up sharing drinks at the end because the drinks are pretty big. So you'd pour half in mine. And
Oh, that's right. You see, I was very kind that way. I was like, I'm going to.
You were very drunk that way.
I was. I'm very nurturing when I'm drunk. I'm like, you're half drunk. No, but the premiere was a lot of fun. There was a lot of energy at it. And we saw, you know, and I want to get into your feels for 97, Sean and Flink. But, you know, after the premiere, and Luigi, you can correct me if I'm wrong, there was a lot of kinetic energy in the room. People were buzzing. They were so excited.
Yes, yes. It was something else. It was like all these people growing up with a show and then seeing it on the big screen again was something else.
My only note for it is seeing those 3 episodes, because you guys, episode 3, so much happens in episode 3. Seeing those 2 episodes plus episode 3 was a lot. Like, and so my takeaway from that night was that the show was great. The animation looked great. I liked the voice acting quite a bit, but the pacing felt so quick. And it's only because the 3rd episode, a lot happens.
A lot,
which we're not going to spoil.
Yes,
we're not going to spoil.
Yeah, let's
it.
Not. Come on.
But a lot happens. You're going to be very happy. But anyways, how did you guys feel about 97? I want to hear those feels.
I loved it. I honestly, I'm like waiting for Flink's reaction to see if he's like agreeing with me or disagreeing with me. I went in very hopeful, given that I had heard so many good things kind of in the rumor mill about it. We know that some of the superhero stuff recently has a tendency to disappoint, but I have to say, I thought it was really good. I mean, the writing is, you know, I saw some criticism of someone we know, someone that we are close with, who was maybe less complimentary about it. But I mean, you still have to remember that it's for, you know, ultimately it's for a demographic that's probably a bit younger and nostalgia for us, you know, older geeks. But no, I thought, like, you talk about the quick pacing. I think in two episodes, so much stuff happened that I was like, oh, this is actually like really exciting and not, you know, it's not taking ages to get back into it. It's not taking ages for stuff to happen. I mean, you know, after two episodes, you're like, oh, wow, there's already like, we're into the story. I know what's going on. Lots of action. So that's my overall analysis. I'm sure we'll go into deeper things, but Flink, what about you?
I loved it. I agree with like, basically everything you say. I thought it was perfect. And, you know, I think regarding the pacing, I think it's pretty clear that there was some sort of Disney mandate that the first episode be like some sort of major callback to Night of the Sentinels and sort of tie off, you know, sort of follow some of those beats and tie off some of the, you know, the plot threads maybe of the original series before they moved on to new stories. But they moved on to those new stories quickly. And I think that the only reason it may have felt quick is because it seemed like the Sentinels and all of that were going to be something more in that first episode. And then it kind of just wound up following like the exact same path. And I thought, yeah, like I thought it was dense, but I thought it was great. I mean, they seem to be mining, at least in these episodes, or at least the second episode, they seem to be mining from my favorite era of Uncanny X-Men, which is give or take like 150 to 250. So yeah, I am seated. I am excited. Exactly what I would want it to be from a nostalgia and an X-Men storytelling perspective. I was super impressed.
I was nervous because family at home, I told Flink I didn't want to hear any of your feels until we actually hit record, because I was like, it's not that I didn't know how you were going to feel about things. Because
yeah, you should know by now.
I had an inkling that you weren't going to hate it, but you know, there's some things here. There's some plot beats that are different, and you know,
yeah.
and the voice actors, you know, we have different voice actors and stuff like that. So I was just, 92 is such a precious series to all of us on the Zoom. You don't know how some people are going to take it, but why don't we dive into the first two episodes? Let's talk about our feels.
Yeah.
I have the episodes up. Obviously, we're just recording for audio, but I'm going to sort of walk us through the scenes and I want you all's reactions. I mean, Luigi already saw me squeezing his hand and screaming yes. like the entire time.
Which is exactly what I would have been doing. Like, it's good that we weren't together because it would be miserable for everybody else with all of our screaming and jumping out of our chairs.
I feel someone, I forgot, we were sitting next to someone, Luigi, but they DM'd me and they're like, you were really rambunctious. I was like, yes, I was, I'm sorry.
Daphne, probably the loudest person in the theater.
Anytime like a name came up, or yeah. like or a character, I just screamed at the top of my lungs.
I believe
so,
it.
I didn't even try because there was no competing.
But Luigi, was it like that thing when you go to like the movie with somebody and they talk super loud and you get embarrassed because you're with the person that's making yes, all the noise?
Yes, exactly like that.
This is why we have you around, Sean, because I'm too diplomatic to say shit like that. And you.
I just say it. Yeah.
He needs the roasting every.
It's like I went to see Dune the other week, and we were like a big group of us. And one of my friends, like, he just would talk almost at like normal volume at certain points, and like, what's Austin Butler comes on, and he just goes, yo, dude, look at his traps. He's huge. But like, he just says it in that voice. And I'm like, shut up. We're watching the movie.
Don't take me out of this.
Yeah.
No, I was not having conversations, but when things happened, I did have an exaggerated reaction to things.
I believe it.
Were you five vodkas in at that point?
I mean, like seven. Okay. Yeah. What I'm also not telling Luigi is that I had like two drinks before he got there.
What?
I had already that explains it.
I pre-gamed our pre-game.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, but
so you,
okay.
You were worse than me.
I was worse than you. It's fine. I'll take it. But okay, listen, the theater goes black and then the opening credits comes on, and these credits were incredible. I mean, in fairness to me, the entire crowd started going crazy.
Yes, I would imagine so.
What did you guys think?
Oh my God.
Turn it over to the forum.
I had tears welling up once, because I didn't know what it was going to be. I knew that Larry was directing it, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be as direct of an adaptation as it kind of was, which I'm totally fine with. And so I had tears welling up like from the opening notes. And then I have to tell you, you know, it's all beautiful. The new animation is gorgeous. But when Emma showed up running alongside the villains at the end of the credits, I legit did like a like out loud on the couch next to my husband. And we had to pause it. I had to compose myself. It was a moment. Those credits they hit just as hard as they did when I was 8-7 years old. I adore them. Bravo, Larry, for sure.
Who does Emma replace in the credits? Is it Warpath?
It's the random little dude in the green jumpsuit.
Yeah, and so, okay, this is a problem we're having in the comments at Power of X-Men, because someone commented like, oh, they put in two girls, M-She-U, in those credits. And like one is Thunderbird. It's Thunderbird, right? It's Thunderbird. And Thunderbird didn't even appear in the series. He was originally supposed to be the character that would die, but they switched it from.
He was in the background on Genosha here and things like that here and there.
The other one was a little green dude that was literally made up, just a made up character for this opening. And they just put in Emma, who is a fan favorite A-list X-Men in the years since 92. And she rocks. And then they put in Deathstrike, who had a larger role than Thunderbird.
Yeah.
So like, come on.
Did you see my jaw literally drop when you said somebody left that comment? I don't understand how people are so out of touch and misunderstand very basic X-Men things like that. It's just so insane.
I mean, it's probably not a huge X-Men fan because...
Well, fair.
You would know, you know, like put politics or opinions like that aside. Like Emma is a much more famous X-Men character. So, of course, they're going to replace with her than some generic nobody, right? So
Correct. Well,
and also, like, they don't mention, like, in episode 2, the opening credits, they include Magneto in the opening. So they're making modifications everywhere. It doesn't make it, it's bullshit. It was so angry. But I will tell you the one thing I loved about the opening credits, and we kind of knew that, you know, it was going to be like this because Bo at our San Diego panel had sort of taken the mic and asked Larry about it. And so we kind of knew it was going to be like a homage. But that Jean was number two, was billed as number two. Or I'm sorry, Madeline was billed as number two in the opening credits. And I was pretty happy with that.
Of course you were. I noticed right away. And I definitely made mental note like, oh, Paul is going to love this.
I just like Winkman, I got teary-eyed. Like it was bringing back all the nostalgia for me. And I thought the animation was great. It's not exactly like the old animation, but it was wonderful.
Yeah. So the opening scene where they show the X-Jet, obviously some modifications to it, Morph is in there. And then when Storm, someone pointed this out to me. Some people are like eagle-eyed to this. When Storm flies at the screen, her eyes are not like whited out. They're just her normal blue eyes.
Oh.
So, look at that. And then we get more in the credits. So he goes from his human to his AOA form, and he has his own logo. And then we also get Bishop. Looks so great in the logo.
I love Bishop's look in the new series.
Oh, it's incredible.
And then we get like little homages to, well, for this one in particular, it's just a straight up like adaptation of the original. So we have, you know, Beast jumping on the cars, Rogue destroying the Sentinel, Cyclops and Storm, and the team running. It was great. It was perfect. It's exactly what we wanted.
Can't imagine there being any improvement to the original's credits. It's like the best. It's the only intro I never, ever skip. So yeah. I'm glad that they did it justice.
So I'm assuming you binged episode 1 and episode 2 back to back?
Of course, with graduation day beforehand. I had to close out the original.
I'm not gonna lie, by episode 2 I skipped the intro.
Wow.
Why would you do that?
Why? What is wrong with you?
And also this, the credits were different between the episodes.
I know.
Just this, so you,
like,
know.
Yeah. This is like what we talked about. You cannot get a Ghost Rider Engine of Vengeance baddie and super glue it on your mirror and say that on the internet. You can't say things like that, Sean. Just like you can't say you skipped the intro. This is why you're the most cancelable one. You are the most cancelable one for this reason.
So is it not just the same theme song? Or is it different?
No, it's the same theme. Exactly.
So why would you watch it again? Like, but right after?
It's different. They add Magneto as number one. Like, Magneto is now,
so it's,
has
not
its
the
own
same
title card.
No,
but
it's
it
not
the same theme song.
So you just said it was the same.
The
song was the same.
Yeah, but so the animation's different though for the second one.
Yes.
Well, I'll go back and I'll watch episode three.
It makes me want to watch, like, for sure, pay attention to each intro, because I have a feeling they might change things.
I just assumed it would be the same one. I was like, I don't need to watch this again.
No. So this, in the second episode, which we're probably jumping ahead a little bit to the second episode, but the second episode, Magneto is the first character in the title card. And then in towards the back half, where they just have like the random action scenes, they replaced those in the second episodes with scenes from the original series. So I think it had Dark Phoenix, it had Bishop Storm traveling back in time, and it had,
Storm with the Morlocks.
Yes, Storm with the Morlocks. That's like my favorite of them, and I can't remember which one it was. So yeah, it was great.
So then
it was great.
When the villains come at the end of the theme song, who's leading them if not Magneto?
It's still Magneto. It's just still Magneto. Magneto.
They just update it, like, they added Magneto, and rumor has it that as the episodes progress and the team swaps out and people get different looks, they will update those.
There you go. I won't skip the intro any longer. How's that?
Sean, you're stressing us out.
We're just diving into the episode
a
now,
minute
okay?
And a half.
Yeah.
This is just the credits.
Get comfortable, people at home. Okay, so we start off at what is this place called? Like the Hip Skate Party. And the Friends of Humanity have taken into custody a one Sunspot, and the X-Men show up to save him. So what were your feels on this opening scene?
I mean, it was incredible. Storm was amazing. She did her iconic "I'm Storm, Mistress of the Elements" intro. We even got a little nod to, you know, Cyclops in the original series with his, of course, not. It was good. I will say, when I saw those moments, like in the trailers over the last couple of weeks, I was worried it was going to be like a bunch of unsubtle callbacks like that, but it actually did wind up working in the context of the show, and especially setting up the newer, badder, more amazing versions of Storm and Cyclops that we're clearly getting in 97.
The level at which we will scrutinize and be like, oh yeah, it's a callback from this from 30 years ago or whatever. Like, I don't think there's that many people realistically that are going to look at it with that lens. So I think it is fun to have those things for, you know, big, big fans. And equally, I'm so happy that it's still kind of campy with Storm being very verbose and over the top.
It wouldn't be the same.
Yeah. I also loved that Cyclops is less of a Boy Scout in this one. And I think, Dayspring, you said it where it's like, he's a Boy Scout mixed with a Tony Stark, that kind of like badass, cheeky side of things. And yeah, I think he seems a lot cooler now than he did in the first.
He's definitely had an issue since Xavier died. It's almost like his dad died and now he's in charge, and I don't want to say he's overcompensating, but I want to say he's embraced being a leader and sort of pivoting from where he used to be. And I think we got that with the Friends of Humanity when they were trying to take off his visor, because in the past they would take off his visor and he would be too afraid to open up his eyes. And now he's here like, not, and then boom, right there. But for me, the scene stealer was Storm. And to pull on what you were saying, Sean, was I was worried going into this. I'm like, how are you going to do a character like Storm, which in the 90s felt a little bit more hokey, a little bit more campy?
What?
And still make her look. No, listen, I will meet you at the monorail, everything. That is all iconic, but it is it is a byproduct of a certain time and place with storytelling for a cartoon. Listen, it doesn't matter because they walk that line beautifully. She walks in. It is everything you want, and it works perfectly.
It still works in this day and age. And let's be honest. If we had mutant powers like Storm and we were rushing into something, I'm going to say a sassy one-liner as I like bring lightning down around me. Like, absolutely.
Definitely. No question.
Yeah, I thought the same. I actually like seeing the Friends of Humanity again. I feel like it's a good moment in time to see that group.
To remind people that we done known about them.
I mean, it's pretty like down to the hats. And this is why, like, I'm always so confused when I'm seeing those comments out there that, oh, the X-Men are woke now and all this stuff. I'm like, have you not paid attention to the X-Men in the last three decades?
Are you even an X-Men fan?
Right. No. Yeah. And even before woke, you know, air quotes was a thing, Rogue's dad had an American flag hat. You know, like people are, that clip is circulating out there. The Friends of Humanity existed. They were protesting. They were, the opening credits is them chasing down Jubilee, and Jubilee like holding onto the chain link fence because they're going to murder her if they get their hands on her. So, you know, I think for it's just so relevant. The Friends of Humanity are so relevant. Carl is there, obviously, with the three marks on his face, and that will eventually become Executioner, Sean's favorite ex-villain ever.
Absolutely. I hope he's in every episode.
So once Cyclops hits off his blast, we get a shot of the outside warehouse, and the Daily Bugle is there, and we have our first round of Easter eggs here, and we find out that there was a Hellfire Gala. And we find out that Peter Parker wrote about it. And we see some mutants there. Marrow, Maggot, Nature Girl, Banshees, Dust. It's pretty good. And I'm curious, do you guys think we're going to get a Hellfire Gala this season?
I hope not. I'm sorry if that's a controversial opinion, but I hope
canceled.
Not.
Canceled.
Canceled, that's it.
Yeah. It depends, I guess, like in the capacity of like the modern day Hellfire Gala, I hope not, because I think it'd be really forced and wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
I think they could do, like, if there's an episode with Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost and they like, you know, in some townhouse in, you know, I don't know, some ritzy area, and it's
the Upper East Side.
The Upper East Side, and they're like, ooh, it's the Hellfire Gala.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that could work.
Well, and let's not forget that in the comics, this era, like X-Men era Magneto was the White King of the Hellfire Club. So I would almost expect that there's going to be shenanigans of that sort going down, especially since, you know, Emma has been revealed in the concept art. I'm pretty sure Shaw was in that art. So I almost assume that that's coming. But like, I to echo what Sean said, like, I just don't think it would feel within the flow of the series and like how it's always existed, a Hellfire Gala as they do it on Krakoa would be just a radical departure. So I guess I'm not like a hard no, but like it would have to make sense within the context of this universe.
I'm thinking like Hellfire Gala in the one that we got in X-Men Classic where Lourdes Chantel was air quote murdered, like that kind of one. I'm not thinking like high end, exactly what you guys are saying, like just a townhouse.
It could be like if the bad guys are Executioner and Sentinels and things that are against mutants in general, they might be like, you're invited to the Hellfire Gala where we're gathering mutants good and bad, and we're going to discuss, you know, how do we protect ourselves, which I think that could be really cool.
Do you think that this is actually Banshee, Dust, Maggot, Marrow, Nature Girl? Do you think this is them, or do you think it's models modeling as them? Because last time we saw Banshee, he was on Muir Island with Moira. Now we're led to believe he moved to New York and got a modeling contract and is walking fashion shows.
I have not put that level of thought into it.
What the fuck? What? This is what has kept me up at nighttime since the trailer dropped.
I wonder if they even put that thought into it, making it.
Yeah, I'm like,
Jesus Christ.
I think it's an Easter egg. I mean, like,
yeah.
All of the things that Larry would sneak into the old show that were just for us that didn't have that kind of significance.
I hate you guys so much. Okay, so anyways, back at the manor. At the manor, Gambit is in a halter top making vignettes.
I am obsessed with that.
With the vignettes or Gambit's halter top?
The crop top. Forget the vignettes.
I just had my first vignette this morning, by the way. Fortuitously, at the resort we were staying at in Disney World.
Because of X-Men 97.
Yeah, I only ordered it because of X-Men 97.
How was it?
You know what that one scene is?
That name.
This is every...
I'm not wearing a crop top.
Every con for the next year, it's going to be like I'm Knuff or whatever, like the Ken t-shirt. It's the new thing like that. Like every gay with a six pack that's a cosplayer is going to be, you know, wearing this crop top and being Gambit for like the parties at night after a con. Dragon Con is going to be filled with them. Filled with them.
Oh, yeah.
As long as they have beignets, I'm good.
Yeah.
I love, Sean, that you're just like, I'm not looking forward to this. You're right. Everyone is going to be wearing them.
Oh, no, I didn't say that I wasn't looking forward to it. Don't misquote me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just said they'll all do it.
I'm not minding it. I'm not minding
it.
Yeah, I won't mind it. Well, I won't mind it. Yeah, let's just say that.
There are so many moments in this show, in the episodes already, where you can kind of tell that it's like a gay showrunner. Yeah. And it's just little things. Like, you have to be gay to notice it, but you're like, yeah, they definitely put that in for
us. That was
for us. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much care and attention to detail in the show. And also, it's pretty obvious.
Can I say, like, Morph is a character that I did not care about at all in the original series? No, I didn't. But this
he got a glow up.
Yeah, he had a glow up. And actually, I'm like, oh, maybe I misjudged Morph.
Morph is the best, man. I was one of the letter writing kids to Fox. I was writing those letters to Fox and letting them know that Morph
I was also writing letters like, keep him dead.
That's just rude. I don't know why you hate fun.
I didn't really care that much for Morph growing up. He didn't really do it for me. But I really liked him in this. And he, for me, I think it's because maybe it was a little bit more evident that he is based off of his Age of Apocalypse personality. Mm-hmm. Obviously based on the look, but being a little bit more of a prankster. Not that he wasn't in the original series.
That was his whole, they based the Age of Apocalypse personality off of the show.
But I literally just said, because he had died and gone through the thing with Sinister so quickly in the series, that we never really had a chance to just see him be fun. And this is what I'm getting out of these first two episodes. Just fun. And by the way, everyone who had a bee in their bonnet about Morph and their pronouns and them being non-binary. I mean, it's not that it's not a thing. It's just that it's just a matter of fact for the character. No one's trying to beat you over the head. No one. Yeah. There's no PSA here. So everyone can relax if you are angry about it. This is just a character who is identifying as non-binary and is fun to watch on screen. That makes sense.
Is it just me? Or did I always, even as a kid, I read Morph as queer. So like, this is not to me a huge development. I'm happy that it's official and they are making it a thing, or not making a thing, making it official. They're not making it a thing. I don't know. It's just, again, I'm consistently surprised by how many people misread what to me has always been so fucking obvious. Like, it's just wild.
You know, I want to say this respectfully, because I think Morph being non-binary makes a lot of sense, but the trope of the shapeshifter being non-binary is not so groundbreaking. So, and this was also revealed 2 years ago at the San Diego panel. So this being a news item recently, just because it ran in Empire magazine and everyone getting angry, it was like, sure, okay, fine, whatever. Like, now you see it's not even a big deal. And wow, a non-binary person is just like everyone else on the team and we're having fun.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's not even a thing in the show. It's not really addressed, like, up to now in the first two episodes, right? So maybe it will be, who knows? And also, it's almost like it's the most literal, like, a shapeshifter literally is non-binary. Like, they can be any gender, anything that they want. Like, it's not, that's not even a debate. You know what I mean? That is their mutant power.
Yeah.
So I don't know why anybody would get mad at it. You're like, you can literally switch between whatever you want to be.
Can we talk about those cameos?
Yes, I think of all of them, Colossus was my favorite. Link?
Yeah, I have to say Colossus as well, just because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the first time we've ever actually seen him in his costume on the animated series. So yes. That was really fun and special. Although it was weird, it wasn't actually Colossus.
It was weird. And I don't want to overthink it. Like, why would he think of
you
him in
overthink?
That costume?
No, you would never do that.
How about this? I love the Archangel one because that makes sense because Archangel has been established in that. And when the plane explodes, you know, he's able to fly and pick up Wolverine. Morph cares a lot about Wolverine. They do have that buddy relationship. But I think one of the questions that came in the comments was, okay, well, if Morph changes into another character like he does with Archangel and he can fly, does that mean he takes on their powers? And I didn't really know how to answer that because he doesn't take on their powers, but I guess if it's a character like Blob or Archangel, he can
It says
physical.
At the end, doesn't it? In the post credits, you know, when they're hovering over them and it shows all their powers, doesn't it say something like take the other shape and gains physical abilities?
Yes.
I think it says something like that at the end.
The physical abilities.
So wait, I'm sorry. You did not watch the opening credits for the second episode.
I watched it once, and I watched the end credit once. This is all you need for credits, generally.
Okay, so he does take on their physical attributes.
Yeah. So I guess, if he turned into Emma, he wouldn't become a psychic, but...
But he could do Diamond.
Yeah.
Or a facsimile. I don't know that he would be... As impervious, I doubt he would be as impervious as Colossus or Emma in her diamond form, but I can see how he would be squishy as Blob.
A wizard did it. Don't overthink it.
Stop it. This is X-Men fans. We're going to overthink everything.
So I do have to jump back to the Gambit in a crop top scene to point out another thing that did happen in that scene that was iconic for me. Which is Rogue in her iconic pink dress.
Yes.
She actually wears it twice. I'm not sure at which points in which episodes, but her in that pink dress was an obsession for me as a little gay boy. And so I was
Well, that's when she's first introduced.
It's true.
She has that pink dress in the mall. And then Storm does her transformation with the lightning like that.
And that pink dress is so important that they altered animation after the fact to make sure that it showed back up again later in the series when Gyrick held up a photo of Storm and Rogue from the mall, which this is my insane nerd knowledge, but in the original pilot, it had them in their uniforms and then they actually changed the animation to put Rogue back in that pink dress. It is that fucking iconic. Just putting that out there.
Did this dress ever appear in the comics proper?
No.
Because I know the Jim Lee dress is a little bit more like floral and the one where she's like this.
Yeah.
But it's just, she doesn't get the pink dress. It's just exclusively
so this is,
to the animated series.
Lenore, it's reserved just for her.
All right. It's a Lenore Zan original.
Are we jumping around then? Because if we're going to talk about outfits, I have quite a few comments to make about the two episodes and outfit choices. Issue number one with outfits. So you have all these horrible things happening to mutants and Sentinels coming back. And Cyclops and Jean are talking to Val Cooper. So, you know, what would be a very serious conversation about, you know, genocide against the mutant people? And she's fucking in an 80s workout outfit on her exercise bike. Could you imagine taking a call like that and you know, talking about your people and the future of your people and the person's there on an exercise, on their Peloton.
Might need to remind you that the female president of the United States was also having a conversation with Gyrick about genocide in workout clothes on a stair climber in the original show. So, this is the thing that high-powered women in the government just seem to do in this universe. I love and embrace that.
Gotta get their steps in.
Could you imagine you're at work having a serious meeting and you jump onto the Teams call and the person's on their Peloton? I don't know.
But listen, first of all, it works so well because Catherine Disher, who was the original voice of Jean Grey, voices Val Cooper. And when we met Catherine Disher at MegaCon, and I was like, oh, wow, she's a little bit more, I don't want to say raunchy, but she did not sound like Jean. And what hearing her here, Catherine Disher literally just rolled out of bed, walked in and recorded and went back to bed because that sounds exactly like how she does in real life and nails it as Val Cooper. I thought she was so great as Val Cooper.
Agreed. It was good. I was happy to see that she was returning in some capacity to X-Men 97. And Val Cooper, she did a great job.
Although all I see is Demanda Martini now. Like, yeah. That's Val Cooper. That's all I see. And especially since she's a little bit more... I don't know how I read Val in the comics, but this is definitely a different version that I didn't read. And I just see Demanda's sass there. I was like, oh, they based this off of Demanda Martini.
Can we do outfit issue number two?
Okay, let's hear outfit issue number two.
I've got a few of them. So actually, outfit issue number two and three are linked. So outfit issue two. So they're going to the club later to go find Sunspot. And you've got half of them that decide to wear civilian clothes and half that are like, no, we're just going to keep our outfits on and be, you know, conspicuous and super easy to spot. Which again, you're like, well, why would half of you dress up and the other half not?
But... I hate to be a broken record, but like, again, that's a callback to Night of the Sentinels when Gambit was at the mall in his uniform and Jubilee was at the mall in her uniform. And then Storm and Rogue were in cutie little dresses. I don't know. I feel like that had to be.
Isn't Jubilee's uniform just her regular clothes, though?
Isn't that just what she wears? But you know what I mean? Yeah. So like Gambit.
Okay, to take your point then. So they're going out in their like they're going out in their uniforms to what should be a civilian moment. Yeah. But then you've got Jean Grey working from home in her maternity wear. She puts on Cerebro. Like, you know, she's going to his mind. She's like, you know what? I'm at home. I'm in my little blouse. I'm not going to put my uniform on for this. I'm just going to do this in my sweatpants and my maternity top.
You think spandex is going to fit over that belly?
Not for Mr. Nathan Summers there. Nope. Yeah. I didn't really notice the fashion unless it was like Gambit's crop top because it was such an extension of that time. But
the basketball scene though.
Yeah. That's ripped right out of the comics. Right. Jim Lee issue number three, I believe, of X-Men. It was fun, and they were vibrant, and they were over the top, and I enjoyed the clothes quite a bit.
Same.
Anything?
But don't get me wrong. I'm not like I still love the show. I thought it was hilarious, but these are moments where I was watching it. And I'm like, I like that energy. If I had Cerebro and I was a psychic, I'd just be in my sweatpants and my like workout top that I didn't even bother changing from, putting it on and be like, I gotta do some work. I gotta go into some guy's mind. I'm not putting on my uniform for this.
Jean's just like sitting there, like in her Lululemon.
Actually, the best it would have been like if it was the uniform from the waist up, but she was in her like Lululemons from the waist down, like every person working from home.
I actually am looking. I'm skimming the episodes really quickly. Jean has a lot of outfit changes for just one episode. She has her workout. She has a referee. She has her maternity wear and she has her 90s. I'm like, they gave the clothing budget to Jean.
Good for her. She deserves it. Sure.
Okay. Well, we find out that Jean is pregnant. And they're talking to Val Cooper in the scene while Sunspot is in the infirmary with Beast and Jubilee. So I kind of want to get all your feelings on it because this is where we're first reintroduced to the characters after 30 years. How did you feel about Jubilee, Jean being pregnant, Beast? I'm curious how all of you felt about these characters.
Beast was Beast.
I thought he was so annoying when he was like hanging upside down and he was waking up Sunspot. It's like, this kid has just been
let him sleep.
Like, let this bitch sleep. Why are you playing Mozart?
But it's the Beast we love from like, I love that he's so over the top with his overly intellectual one-liners and, you know, listening to the classical music. It's the likable Beast rather than the comic book Beast. Yeah.
I mean, it's Beast and Jubilee from the animated series, man. You can't get much better than Jubilee anytime, but animated series Jubilee, especially the portrayal. You can, you know, she's a little more effervescent. It seems like this time she's a little more believable as a teenager, and I think that comes down to how Holly Chow is portraying her. And I'm obsessed. She's barely been in it so far.
Oh, what's do that? We see a romance?
Yeah, I think it's quite obvious that there's going to be romance there.
Oh, definitely. And why wouldn't there be? He's adorable. His little outfit, that jacket looks expensive.
It does look expensive. I would have paid a lot of money for that. But no, you know what? I'm going to disagree with all three. Wait, Luigi, do you think there's a romance?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I disagree. I think they have a big sister, little brother relationship. I think she sees so much of himself in of herself in him. And I think this is really setting the stage for Jubilee not being the most junior member of the X-Men and sort of graduating to maybe full-time X-Men or Generation X. I think that's where the story is going.
I think I've seen, has he not been referred to as her boyfriend in some of the like articles and interviews? Have you?
Oh.
I have. Well, but whether that's goes real
my
or not.
There goes yeah, my there... theory. I don't know.
I mean, there were googly eyes. I mean, in that club scene... There were googly eyes.
And by the way, at the after party, Luigi, we were talking to Guy and Holly, and they were so cute together. Like, they had, like, maybe that this infectious, like, you know, friend energy that was really... That's why I read into it a little bit more like that. But yes, these two characters that historically haven't had much panel time in the comics, seeing them here together, I love the pairing. I think there's some similarities. I think you can propel Jubilee's story, whether it's a romance or not, through Sunspot and bring Sunspot in as the point of view character. One thing I want to point out is that in the study, when Jean and Scott are done talking to Val Cooper on FaceTime in 97, there is a portrait of the O5. And this has caused so much controversy online because Angel's on it.
Okay, but when we have seen clips in Cold Comfort, the Iceman episode of the original series, the original five X-Men, including Angel, there was a cutscene with all of five of them already. So, like, people are just complaining that aren't paying attention. Ugh, I can't with the internet. I'm sorry. Continuity matters. But the bad continuity in this case, like the Angel being in with the X-Men in Cold Comfort was always out of place to me. So, but it would just make sense that the bad continuity of the old show would carry forward to the bad continuity of the new show. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, they cancel each other out and it becomes okay.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's always been sort of inconsistent in the series, and all this is doing is showing the portrait. And some people have just been so nasty about it. And I'm like, just chill the fuck out. Like, please.
It's not that serious.
It's never been. Here's the thing. If you didn't have a problem with it the first go around, why are you complaining about it now? Like, only because you have a platform to do so? Like, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's just people just. But anyways, then Sunspot goes into the danger room with Jubilee and they have their first danger room session.
Yeah, and it really like. It didn't. It really does follow the structure so much of Night of the Sentinels, but like not, you know, because Jubilee also gets thrust into a danger room situation with Wolverine and Gambit in that episode. So like the parallels are there, but they weren't so obvious. Like it wasn't just like one big long homage to where I even realized it until like after the fact. You know what I mean? Until the episode was wrapped, I didn't even realize all of the parallels. So I, even if it is a total callback once you realize it, I still thought it was a unique and different enough take that it was still enjoyable. And of course, I mean, this was our intro to Wolverine in the series. Yeah.
Yeah.
So having him come in and be that Wolverine giving sass to a new teenager and unrealistically wide claws around a head. But other than that, you know, I thought it was great.
You know, also speaking of callbacks, and something I had in my notes was that, you know, Jean being apprehensive about being, and this is something that plays out in episode two as well, but that she doesn't want to be at the mansion anymore. She wants to go off and live her life because they're going to have a baby. It's time for them to move on. But she's also terrified at the idea of this baby being a mutant. And that's a callback to the end of season one, where she tells Cyclops, if we have children, they'll be mutants just like us. They're going to face the same things we do. So we see a lot of those seeds planted here with Maddie. Excuse me, I keep saying Jean, but Maddie, and Cyclops, where Maddie really wants to go off and have a life outside of, you know, persecution and the mutant stigma. So it's just there's a lot of themes planted very early on, and it's just very lovely. And Yeah.
Do we want to get into the serious stuff, or do you want to keep talking about the funny things of it? Because there is all those beautiful themes of, like, you know, there's this speech that they do when they're interviewing him later on, and he's like, it's just in vogue what you guys are, and people are pretending. Yeah. But deep down, you, like, the more you guys get, well, I don't remember exact quote, but it was like, the more rights or the more acceptance you get, it takes away from us. So that was the general gist of it, right? And I mean, it's so obviously parallel to real life, and you know, what different groups and communities face, that I thought it was really poignant. And hopefully, like you said something before, like, if people are missing this, you're like, it's pretty obvious, they're hitting you over the head with it. So how can you be an X-Men fan and not catch that?
I mean, that speech in particular was written from the heart. I mean, Beau really understood a lot in that Magneto speech scene, and a lot of people call it out in episode 2. But to quickly wrap our thoughts on episode 1, though, we do have the club scene that we briefly mentioned. And someone said this was like Euphoria meets X-Men. And I think Beau had said it in an interview where he was here, like, this was inspired by all of, like, the club party scenes in LA that I had gone to. And I was like, yes, but also in New York, this would be in Bushwick.
It was a great scene. The animation was so smooth with all the flashing colors and, like, everybody's eye, like, reflecting in everybody's eyes and faces. And I thought it was one of my favorite scenes, probably in the first episode. But you know, I have a criticism. It's my only criticism. I just, how are we going to have a scene in a club?
I know.
With a mutant with light-based powers dancing. And it's not a Dazzler cameo. I'm sorry. I'm fine with Jubilee being here. I love Jubilee. I don't expect Dazzler to be a big part of this, but don't make Jubilee Dazzler. Please do not do that to me. It breaks my heart. But that's it. That's literally the only criticism I'm going to have this entire episode. So
definitely a missed opportunity to bring Dazzler in.
It would have been great. I'm glad I'm not the only one. But
they're saving her for something way better and way bigger.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Kidnapped by Hellfire goons with her cigarette smoking voice. I'm so looking forward to that happening again. I also have to say about the club scene is that I am buying this vinyl, because when it comes out, I know Mondo is going to do one. They do vinyl for all of the big Marvel productions, and the music in general, obviously, but in a club scene, it was especially prominent. But I'm enjoying the score to this. I believe it's the Newton Brothers.
Yep.
I'm not sure. They're in the opening credits. I think it's the Newton Brothers, but they're doing a tremendous job. I've really liked the overall sound of the show.
And then we cut to Cyclops and Bishop and Storm interrogating Gyrick. And I had forgotten that Gyrick was actually responsible for Xavier's assassination and graduation day. Completely had blown my mind.
Easy to do, because he doesn't at all look like Gyrick in that episode. He's just like a generic dark-haired guy. There's no glasses, no red hair, nothing. You would have no idea it was Gyrick without the voice. So he's easily forgettable that he had something to do with it.
I love that Bishop is here, because Bishop obviously is a detective in the comics, right? That's his, like, big thing, especially during the extreme Mutant Town, you know, era. That was the early aughts. But this scene to me was amazing, because he's here, Cyclops is interrogating Gyrick, and he's here like, I'm going to get you 10 years off if you cooperate with us. And he's here like, ha ha ha, I must really kill you. And he's here like, I'm actually not the one you need to be afraid of. It's actually my wife. And Maddie cuts in, and she's here like, you being so hateful right now makes your mind weak, and I'm able to infiltrate you. And then she finds out that there's someone else in Gyrick's mind, and she has a vision of Master Mold, like, incinerating everyone.
Okay, so obviously, I mean, maybe not obviously, but it seems like that is, of course, like, an allusion to Jean being Maddie. But, like, who did, there's like a spectral form that she sees while she's there. Does anybody have any theories as to, like, who that is?
I asked Jeff. Jeff thought it was Cable. Like, it was just Cable saying, I'm sorry. Because the figure says, I'm sorry. Maybe it's Xavier?
Who knows? I mean, that entire sequence was actually pretty genuinely chilling. I mean, all of those graves, it seems like we're getting a mutant massacre of some sort, or at least an allusion to it, because I don't know. That scene was
well,
creepy.
It wouldn't be an X-Men franchise without one.
Correct.
But, you know, Gyrick said something really interesting, and this was, you know, what Shauna had said earlier about that, you know, it's only fashionable to be supportive, right? And that tolerance is extinction for us. And that phrase, tolerance is extinction, we know will be the title of the last three episodes of the season. So this speech that he gives is somehow going to be tying into the larger themes here, but I'm excited for it. I mean, the word tolerance and, you know, in the X-Men franchise, I go somewhere, which is zero tolerance. Then we're back in the X-Jet and it explodes. And this is the famous clip that's been circulating online, yeah, that was shown at Comic-Con, where the Sentinel attacks the Blackbird and the X-Men fall to the ground. And Cyclops says to me, my X-Men, and they go up against Trask and the Sentinels, and Val Cooper kind of comes up to like do the cleanup crew. But what did you guys think of the sequence?
When he said to me, my X-Men, chills. Mm-hmm. Chills.
Absolutely. I mean, I said it earlier, like just in that scene with all of that action and all of those characters. I mean, yes, the animation is not the same as it was in 1992, but it's in instances like this, it's so much better, because you would never have been able to have that sort of fluid action with the painted cell animation that they were doing in the 90s. So just the capability of them being able to pull off a scene like that and seeing a scene like that all these years later, it was incredible. And I mean, it only gets better once they're on the ground actually fighting the Sentinels.
I really am confused by people who say they don't like how the art and the animation looks, because this is more action than we had ever got in the original series.
Yeah.
And it's no shade. It's because it's been three decades since this show came out. Animation has just evolved quite a bit. But this is where Hammy and I had a conversation online, because he's here like, why didn't the radar in the Blackbird sort of pick up that there was a Sentinel coming? And I said, oh, I can forgive that. And Hammy had receipts. He was here like, no, you can't, because you've been complaining that there are no security cameras on Krakoa.
That's
that the
true.
Secret just walk in. And I was like, wow, Hammy, I am eating my words right now.
I am
tasting my medicine and it is very bitter.
Did you guys not? I did think that when I was watching. I was like, oh, where did that Sentinel come from? Like, did I miss something? I almost wanted to like rewind like 10 seconds to be like, was I not paying attention? Because it did seem a little like no one, there was no like radar, or they just didn't see it out the window. But I think it's forgivable, but I also don't have lots and lots of recorded footage of me complaining about security on Krakoa. So I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think they wanted to give us an action scene. You know, it's like Star Wars. There's really no security cameras on the fucking Death Star. Let the mindless action be the mindless action. There's so many other loaded, charged moments on this show that you can just let an action scene be an action scene. I'm sorry, yeah. Hammy, I'm not coming for you.
I can, like, my larger point with everything with Krakoa was that it was just more flimsy storytelling. Whereas here, where I feel the storytelling is strong, you can start forgiving things, especially since we know the Sentinels have been adapting. You know, you can make up anything you want in your head. But I mean, this action sequence was so good. This is where we really saw Cyclops be a badass. And when Cyclops is like, I don't need you guys, like, see you on the ground. And he goes like this, and he just falls to the floor and goes like, to me, oh my God, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Perfect. And again, it only gets better.
Yeah, I love that they reference, like, you know, after everybody gets their first initial little fight scene, you get to see them all do something, and then more Sentinels are coming, and they're like, Omega level detected, and Storm just kicks all their asses, and I'm like, oh, it's cool that they reference the fact that she's an Omega level mutant, like, right off the bat.
When Cyclops said, give them the forecast, and the Sentinels all started going, Omega threat detected, this moment. Perfect. As Storm being my favorite character from the animated series, this was the coolest thing I think that she has ever done. I mean, she crystallized the sand with the lightning and then just did like a tornado of glass and just shredded those fucking sentinels to bits. And I don't know, one of the scenes in like anything ever. I don't know. I was floored. I thought it was incredible. And I have nothing but love for all of the returning voice actors and all of the new, you know, the joining voice actors. But Allison Seeley Smith, she just absolutely steals it for me as Storm. And hearing her in particular and seeing her character being the true badass we all know she is, it's just goosebumps. Goosebumps almost every time she's on screen and speaking. It's just wild.
I agree with you. 100%. I think everyone is doing such a great job, but Allison Seeley Smith in particular.
Yes.
Wow. Especially Lord. The next episode. Next episode is amazing. But yeah. So then the episode ends with the X-Men back at the basketball court. Scott and Jean sort of announce they're going to leave. Wolverine's angry about it. And then they ask, well, who's going to lead the X-Men? And Magneto fortuitously shows up with the last will and testament of Charles Xavier that has little metal caps on the book, and they read it, and everything that Xavier has owned or accomplished is now left to Magneto.
The big old will.
He deserves it.
That like, was a big will, by the way.
Well, like, I was like, why is that not a folder or digital? Like, oh, but it's 97. Okay, like, why isn't it a folder? But anyway, it's a small
manila folder, like a really nice manila folder. But we knew that scene was coming.
Yeah.
I saw some reviewers online, and this is me, and this, you know, to give Hammy credit, I did think, like, why didn't anyone just, like, say, like, wait a minute, no. One, he's not really dead. He's just off-world, A. B, can we get a lawyer? Can we get Jennifer Walters in here to, like, verify all of this stuff? Like, so, you know, we can assume all that happened off-screen.
We can assume. Yeah. We can assume.
Can we go back to the fight scene?
Yes.
Would you guys be pissed if you were X-Men and then you put your lives in danger and then you realize that like your friend Storm could have just come and done that from the beginning?
But then it wouldn't be fun. They would. Everybody wants their own special moment.
Yeah. You'd be like, let me kill one before you come and do clean everything up. I want my little moment of glory.
Exactly. And come on, we got Beast piloting a Sentinel, which is probably the coolest thing any version of Beast has ever done. So
that's true.
I do have a question about Trask. Now, are was it meant to be clear? Am I just dumb by even thinking it wasn't clear that he is the one supplying the Sentinel tech to the Friends of Humanity? Or do we think that there's somebody else involved?
I think there's someone else involved. Yeah. I don't think it was clear. I don't think it was clear. I think it's whoever Jean sensed in Gyrick's mind, that's the person who is supplying the Sentinel gear. It's the way I kind of took it. And maybe Trask is working together with them or in tandem, but I assume there's someone larger pulling the strings here.
And I do have to follow up on something that I have said in a prior, when we were reacting to the trailer in a prior episode about Gambit charging up Wolverine's claws, which this is the episode where that happens.
Talk about it. Yeah.
I kind of poo-pooed the idea because I was like, well, all that would do is explode Wolverine. And I think that's what actually happened because he literally is charged at the Sentinel's head. All we see is the explosion and the Sentinel go down. And then later Wolverine was present, but his top half was all shredded. His top half, I think they actually did what I wanted them to do. They actually exploded Wolverine. It wasn't just a cheap, look how cool his claws look up charged. They exploded Wolverine. And I props to them for that. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I thought that too. For me, it's like the mechanics of it. Like, how can Gambit like jump on Wolverine and Wolverine still keep up that speed? I know. Okay, fine. I'm done.
He's Wolverine. He's the best there is at what he does. And what he does whatever the fucking plot wants him to in that moment.
What did you all think of the first episode? Before we hit episode two, what did you all think?
A plus.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good start.
Excellent.
But I do have a question. As you watch it as an adult, and who... Was it Lady J, who said it on your interview with her, Day Spring, where as a kid, you remember, like, you watch it and you're like, oh, Cyclops is a Boy Scout and Wolverine and Gambit are such badasses. And then as an adult, you go back and you're like, when he makes the point, you let Sunspot get away and you're all like, you're all adults and you've let this like teenager run off. And do I have to do everything myself? Like, that resonated with me so much as an adult, where sometimes you're like, is no one taking responsibility? Does Cyclops have to do everything for everybody?
I felt that.
It is true. Well, that's why he doesn't want to leave, because he's here like, yeah, that's the one he's not telling Maddie. He's here like, these chumps can't take care of himself. Yeah,
you're all a bunch of fuck ups. Exactly.
It really did feel like dad energy there when he went to the basketball court and they were all looking at him. And I was just like, okay, this is why. But that's a clever part of the writing. That's the back end of it. That's why Cyclops doesn't want to leave, because he doesn't feel they're ready. He's not saying it, but he doesn't feel they're ready. And Jean's like, no, you know, they'll take care of themselves. You know, like, the team will always be family, but the X-Men transcend you and they have to learn. Although I would say you have Storm there. That would be my only counterpoint. You can leave because
he should know.
Yeah, Storm. Definitely Storm can lead the team. Yeah, only Storm. That's it. That's the only one I can think of.
Plus for me, the first episode.
Oh, the first.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, here we go. All right, on to episode 2.
Episode 2. And the only thing to know for episode 2 is what we talked about in the opening, which is that we have Magneto in, and then they give us scenes from, you know, the series where Bishop's traveling through time. Storm is winning, you know, wins the leadership of the Morlocks, and we see Dark Phoenix.
I'll go rewatch it.
Okay, so then you do have to watch it. So then we cut, and everyone's having a conversation about Magneto, because Magneto has been going around the world saving people on Coney Island, and this is not settling well with Val Cooper and a number of other people. And he rescues Callisto, and is it Leech or Artie?
It's Leech.
Yeah. Saves Callisto and Leech from the Friends of Humanity.
When he does it, what's the line he says? It's like super patronizing. He's like, you don't even leave them to their indignant, like life in the sewer or something. Like,
you don't even let them live in your filth or something.
Yeah,
like
or something
that.
Like that. Like, it was kind of like, oh, thanks. Like, if you're getting saved in the corner, you're like, okay.
I mean, I understand his broader point, but I think I would be a little insulted.
It's like,
somebody,
why are you picking on them? They're so pathetic. Don't pick on these people. You'd be like, wait a second.
They're living in your shit water and you're coming for them. I do have to say, though, something small but meaningful details in the opening scene where Magneto rescues the Ferris wheel situation. The firefighter in that scene was a female firefighter. And then, oh, wait, I'm getting ahead. Sorry. I want to make a point that there's was a female firefighter at Coney Island and then a female member of the Friends of Humanity in another scene. But we're not at that scene yet.
Was it the same character?
Do what?
Was the firefighter the Friend of Humanity?
No. Those are just like a small, meaningful, random detail is like, we're having more women in the background. Like, that wasn't, I had just did like a rewatch of the animated series, and I don't think we ever saw a female Friends of Humanity member. And typically when you see firefighters, they're men. So just there was thought and care put into even like the smallest details like that. And that to me matters. And it shows that people, you know, people care.
When we interviewed the Leewalds back in like 2020 Flink, remember we talked about them purposely putting in a female president there because they wanted to shoot
on the treadmill.
Yeah. The one I was thinking about was with Days of Future Past, where the Sentinels like take over, but it was a female president. And that was very important for them, especially Julia. Well,
it was just nice to see. I know I jumped a little ahead. Sorry. We're still in the sewers with the Morlocks and the human.
You treat yourself to jumping ahead to whatever point in the episode you want.
Don't want chaos. If you know that if you let us just go off, there's no stopping. There will be
but
no
we
end
are
to this
there
episode.
Because that is where Leech and Callisto are. And there is a female Friends of Humanity. So you were on point, bitch.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Listen, bitch.
Luigi's like, would you two just shut up?
I'm sorry. This is how we are.
She looks pretty fierce, though.
She does. Like, if I was going to get fucked up by a bigot, at least let it be a hot blonde and, you know, hanging with the boys.
She looks like the girl from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Did you guys think that?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't think that, but I can now. I can see it now.
I can't remember her name in real life.
Is it Caitlin Olsen? I think it's Caitlin Olsen, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. There's only one Olsen or three Olsens I subscribe to.
But that's what I thought when I saw it. I was like, it looks like Always Sunny, the girl from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And it feels like that's the type of thing she'd end up with by accident in an episode. You know, like the gang ends up in a
joins
hateful...
the Friends of Humanity.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito, how did I get here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the scene. Listen, this is where Executioner is also like suiting up, and I'm just so happy to see Carl in action, voiced by Lawrence Bane, who was the original Cable. Familia, we have an episode dropping with him next week, our long-awaited episode, 2 years in the making with him. But I think what's really great about this, I liked episode two to counter Luigi here. I really did like episode two. I think there's a lot of powerful moments, and I think they're setting the stage with showing how dire the situation is getting with Friends of Humanity, even though things are supposed to be going well for the mutants.
Well, yeah. I mean, as soon as something is going well for the marginalized, the bigots are going to step up their game big time. So I think that is, you know, a point that Luigi made earlier, is that there's so many nods to the current political climate that it's just, that are extensions of what was just fiction back. Well, it maybe wasn't totally fiction. We were just kids and not completely in touch with what was happening in the world. But either way, it's a total parallel to the world we're living in now. And it's just, it's impactful. It's very impactful.
Can I say something about fashion and being thirsty? Magneto walking in that purple costume.
Oh my God.
With his hair down. Whap, whap, whap. I'm sorry. I don't care. Like, I got so turned on scene. And when he's standing there in the, oh, he looks so beautiful. I'm like, daddy, put daddy in cuffs. What?
And those gloves.
And the gloves.
Like
the
opera gloves.
Yeah. Yes. I was just going to say the sleeveless bodysuit with the opera gloves and the mullet. Magneto has always, I've always found Magneto hot, honestly. But this look is next level. It is absolutely next level. Thank God we have it in animation.
I hope he goes back to his old costume.
Oh, you're so wrong. Oh my God. I mean, when he eventually does, you know, a heel turn and betrays everybody and is evil again, of course he'll be in that costume. But let us have this purple opera glove
Magneto.
Luigi,
it's going to be a cold outfit in the cons for people to cosplay.
I want to see everyone. I want to see everyone
no sleeves
cosplaying this. Everyone needs to cosplay.
The main things are going to be Crop Top Gambit and Basketball Cyclops are going to be the things that you're going to see. You marked my words at Dragon Con this year. Yeah.
Are you guys going to be doing one of those? I want to hear from the cosplayers. Are you guys going to
Luigi's going to do Crop Top. I'm going to do Cyclops, and we're going to shoot it together.
Yeah.
There you go.
And I'll show up with my opera gloves.
Yeah.
I want to be pregnant, Gene. Except I'm not pregnant. I just ate a lot of pizza.
Yeah.
I had a lot of Subway.
You'll be like, that's not my wife, you're Madeline. Like, you're just gonna look at me, Sean, and go, that's Madeline.
Yeah. No drinking when you're pregnant, though.
You are, Paul. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking about costumes again, after the scene with Maddie and Storm, and she's like holding up her Marvel Girl outfit.
Yeah. Oh, is that scene? Have we got I do have thoughts on that scene.
We're on that scene.
So, yes, I loved seeing the Marvel Girl outfit. And at first, I was a little annoyed that Jean was giving such like an expository, this is the outfit that I wore on the Dark Side of the Moon when we fought the Shi'ar and I was possessed by a cosmic force. But then she kind of pivoted and like actually made that part of what she was actually going to say. So it was fine. But I appreciated that scene actually a lot because it really highlighted Storm and Jean's friendship. And I feel like there's a lot of talk about Storm and Jean being BFFs, but
you don't always see ever it. Shown.
It's never. Really, yeah. There's really, I think this is honestly one of the few meaningful examples that I can think of where we've really seen them be best friends. And like when Jean had her hand on her belly and Storm put her hand on top of it, like that, it's a cartoon, but like that was like a real moment. You know what I mean? And I loved that scene so much.
Wait, when Luigi and I were talking to Lenore in the after party, she mentioned that scene because it was so beautiful seeing people together. But I have to agree with you. No spoilers. But episode 3, there is a nod to their sisterly relationship that will make you cry. And that you will like, yes, they are. I know.
What did you say to me the other day? You're like, if you don't cry during episode 3, I don't remember you. Like, you're a heartless monster or something like that. I think your exact words that you said to me earlier today.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure you're going to come on and just be like, wasn't that good?
Meanwhile, I will have sobbed. We know I'm going to cry.
I was on the plane coming back from LA, and I was thinking about this scene in particular, and not this one, but the scene that you'll see in episode 3, and I was crying. Do you know what, towards the end, Luigi?
Yes, I know the scene.
Like literally falling.
Okay, I was tearing in the movie theater.
Oh, I just thought you were drunk. I thought you were just about to throw up.
No, that was you.
Yeah. That's true.
Pre-party,
that was you screaming and throwing up.
Yeah, actually, you cut back to it, and Luigi's like crying while holding like my head up because I'm vomiting into the popcorn bucket.
I'm crying out of embarrassment.
Okay, so yeah, we agree that was a great scene between Maddie and Storm. And then we get into other characters, which are Magneto and Rogue. And we sort of have a little hint here that something may be up with them.
Okay.
I mean,
now
it's a little hint.
I have not seen it myself. I've only seen people saying things like read a comic sometime when they're like defending this Rogue and Magneto flirtation, but obviously, like, is it out there? Are people mad about this? I've heard that apparently are people are.
Or mad do people just want to flirting, or mad that they're what?
Well, I guess I'm jumping ahead to the end of the episode where like Gambit sees the, or like they hold hands and like Gambit gets his little shady look on his face. And I haven't seen outrage, but I've seen a lot of people reacting to outrage. So I guess, is that not a thing? People just want to say read a comic sometime?
I don't know. I haven't seen people too angry about it, to be honest with you. They've been angry about a lot of things, but Eric and Rogue, they seem to be okay with, at least on the Power of X-Men comments and DMs. I'm not seeing anything too angry for it, but this is obviously a nod to the comics.
Yeah.
As we know what's happening, you know, when he's able to touch her, that is Age of Apocalypse reference as well, that he's able to touch her because he creates like some kind of magnetic field over his skin. Yes. And the scene, just so we can already tackle it since we're talking about it, that scene where Gambit has a card in his hand, it's like he's ready to, he's a fighter and a lover and a fighter, but he can't bring himself to fight because he's so heartbroken. Oh, chef's kiss.
Poor Gambit. Poor Gambit. Go eat a beignet and calm down.
Go eat a beignet. Those are really good, by the way. I'm sorry.
They're delicious.
So the big thing in this episode is that Val Cooper arrives and they want to put Magneto on trial. They take him to the Paris court, and that's where he gives this really incredible speech. And it's a very beautiful speech. And he talks about how, you know, growing up, he was taken to a concentration camp. And then years later, the people who were being persecuted became the persecutors. And it was just really lovely that saying that even though we're playing by their rules, they will still come for you. It's a very empowered, beautiful speech. And it gets interrupted by Executioner and the Friends of Humanity because they're storming the trial. And it's kind of spliced together with Jean going into labor and having to make it to the hospital. Did I get all of that for this montage here?
Yeah. I'm just really happy that they are pretty faithfully adapting Uncanny X-Men number 200 with the trial of Magneto. I mean, you know, if I am going to mention anything about the pacing, I do feel like that kind of went really quickly and, you know, resolved itself rather fast. I don't know what other way to resolve it than how they did, but it was nice to see it. And like, it was basically the plots were beat for beat with the comics in that situation. So it wasn't the Friends of Humanity interrupting the trial in the comics, of course. So it just made me really happy. Like, again, I've said it like 100 times, but just the care, the attention to detail, the understanding of, you know, the importance of the trial of Magneto. I loved it. I thought this was an excellent scene.
Yeah, no, I loved it. I mean, Magneto's speech, really epic. And then the storming of the, like, you know, it's not quite exactly, it's from a courthouse, but like, they're quite parallel to other things that have happened in recent history, which I thought was quite interesting. And wasn't it at the same time of the scene that I was cutting back to Wolverine driving Maddie to the hospital?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Which I thought was like a nice little bit of humor added into like the very serious moments where he's just like, looks very overwhelmed by, like, you know, he can go face Sentinels, this and that, but like, oh my God, driving her to the hospital to give birth is a bit much.
The funniest moment in these episodes was definitely when Jean said, he's coming, and Wolverine draws his claws and is like, Apocalypse, who? Who's coming? I thought that was, because that's just so Wolverine. It was excellent. And by the way, I don't know if you guys caught it, but the streets and some of the signs as they were chaotically driving to the hospital were the names of like X-Men creatives.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, no.
I caught Wine Way, like Lin Wine Way. I caught Romita.
Yeah, Romita Salon.
I didn't get to finish rewatching the second episode, so I'm a little less unfamiliar with it than the first, but I did catch those two names, and I'm sure there are more, but I thought that was, again, the attention to detail. I just really, you can tell that people who love the X-Men and respect the history and the people that they are deriving their work from, you can tell that that's there. And I just really appreciate that.
So my heart breaks for this next scene where Storm jumps in front of Executioner because he's going to hit Magneto, and she takes the ray, which is a concentrated dose of the electromagnetic field, whatever radiation in the collars, but it has permanently altered her genome and has depowered Storm. And oh my God, Allison Seeley Smith's performance in this, gorgeous.
It's insane. I never thought that that's a story that they would tackle. I guess the Mohawk should have tipped me off, maybe. But I'm so excited to see it. And I know from the episode titles that we are getting Life Death. So that's going to be fucking amazing. That, again, falls in the range of issues that are my all-time favorites. And I'm really curious how they're going to do a Storm tripping on peyote with Forge and rediscovering like her powers on the animated series. You know what I mean? Like, I'm interested to see how they're going to figure this one out.
I'm really excited too. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's nice that they're putting her in the forefront and giving her something that's a bit deeper than just the sassy one-liners, which I do love.
Yeah,
but like, it's, there's a bit more substance than just like a really camp verbose speech when she summons wind and lightning. Luigi?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited to see the life and death story with Forge and see how they tell that in the animated series. We also got the little cameo from Forge in the beginning.
And
the first episode.
Did we?
Was on the screen before they were talking to Val Cooper.
Would make sense because
X-Factor.
In the animated series version of X-Factor, Forge was around, so presumably he would have dealings with Val Cooper. That makes perfect sense.
I fucking love that Val Cooper has like her hands in everyone. That's iconic.
I just love that Val Cooper is in the X-Men animated series now. Like, that is a win for, you know, ball-busting, power-suit-wearing women everywhere, that Val Cooper is finally getting the credit she deserves.
Okay, listen, I think this is such a beautiful story that we're gonna get with Storm, and I'm so happy she's front and center. But the one scene I am dying for them to do, if we're gonna bring in Forge and that relationship with Storm, you know what scene I want, which is her on her knees crying, saying, "I was gonna say yes," as Forge like walks out. I wanna see that.
I mean, wow,
That's
we're
not
gonna
gonna
have to.
happen.
No,
I agree, it's
we're
not
gonna
gonna
have to fast
happen.
forward to a lot
Yeah.
of relationship building for that. But it
And
could
based on the
season three.
pacing. Yeah.
Thank you, Luigi. Yes, you're right. Based on the pacing, we could see it sooner. It could be
It's
like a
true.
season finale. It could be a season finale.
It's
You think they're
true.
gonna leave her depowered all season?
No. She gets repowered, and then her and
Yeah.
Forge have a relationship, and you know. He proposes, and then, you know, at the end, Forge is like, "You're too selfish, of course not, blah, blah, blah." And then she like falls to the ground and he walks out. She goes, "I was gonna say yes." And like, that's
With her
where,
high pony.
with her high pony, she's wearing her high pony in her 90s outfit, but
Iconic.
iconic. So Jean Maddie gives birth to Bibbit Cable, and we all knew it was gonna be Baby Cable based off of that Marvel Legends.
I was
Like,
irrationally hoping. Okay, let me have my irrational hopes, please.
that it was gonna be.
did you even like did you actually
No, of
believe
course
that? Yeah,
not.
okay, good.
Of course not. I'm not delusional. I'm irrational, but I'm not delusional. About this, anyway. I know where Rachel Gray stands. I'm sorry, Rachel Summers. There's no need to call her Rachel Gray anymore when Jean's alive.
That's right. But yeah, so it ends with, you know, Jean has the baby and they're back at the mansion. Storm takes off and there's a knock on the door. And it's presumably real Jean who says, "I need the X-Men." And what's the first thing she does? Faints.
Faints.
And then we get
So it's
into
definitely the real Jean, is what you're
it.
telling me.
It has to be the real Jean, and
Badass
she
Jean
faints.
has to be Maddie.
And then it cuts to clone Jean, Maddie. And I have to tell you, I thought in this last panel with that shot of Maddie, it looked identical. I could easily identify her as Maddie. They just did something with the animation, her eyebrows, something. But I was like, that is Maddie energy right there. And that's where we're at.
But does she know she's Maddie? Like, is she Maddie or is she just a Jean clone that really thinks she's Jean?
I don't
And
know.
if
I
she's
guess.
a Jean clone that really thinks she's Jean and doesn't realize that she's like duping you, doesn't that become very complicated, right? Like if you were dating somebody and then you found out that you've been dating the clone of your partner, but for like years,
You would
and then
have
your
to
partner
stay with
comes
the
back,
clone.
would you kind of be like, well, I've kind of been with them
Y
more now,
yes.
so.
Yes. Like, absolutely. There's no question. Like, if you've
Or
had
it's
a
2024, you just get
child,
into a. You just do like a throuple scenario.
well, that's fine too. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
best of both worlds for Scott. Why not?
Luigi and I are quiet, so we'll pick this up next week.
Jesus Christ, I forgot y'all have already seen it. Yeah, y'all stay quiet. I'm not even looking at the screen anymore. I don't want to
Are we
see
getting two episodes next week or one?
just
One.
one.
Just one.
Yeah, we're down to just one.
Luigi's like, damn
Yeah,
it.
so y'all have 2 weeks until you have fresh X-Men 97. Then you'll feel our
Good.
pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
Those of
can
us
go
that
into
couldn't have been
surprise.
there and
Us.
hobnob with all the voice actors and whatnot.
Yeah, us
Yeah.
normies that just had to watch on Disney Plus, Jesus.
Anyway, so overall thoughts on this premiere? I thought it was great, so much fun. I'm excited for the X-Men. They're back officially. It's unanimous. There's 100% like Rotten Tomato score.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy. All the reviews are positive.
Yeah.
Anyone's angry. Listen, I don't want to, because I happen to think Hammy is really intelligent. Shocker. I think he's
That is a
very
shocker. No,
no, but
I'm
Hammy d really did think about the show. He talked about what he
kidding.
didn't like. I respect his opinion on things.
I also feel like similar to Hammy, but then also don't I see both kind of sides of that.
Yeah. And Hammy and I had a
I
conversation, the distinction between the animation looking good and the actual animation, and whether it's a style choice or it was lazy or whatever, there are some beats in the animation that I did find odd to Hammy's credit, but it wasn't for me anything overly distracting, sort of the
No.
pangs that come with modern animation.
I think for me, it's just I am watching this show as a 7-year-old child, basically. Mm. I don't like, yes, I'm here. We're in hour two of dissecting it and discussing it. But at the same time, I don't want to think about it overly critical, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I want to think about it and talk about it with you guys and really get into the weeds with it. But like, I don't. This is like a situation where I don't want to dwell on those critical thoughts because, you know, if I watched the original X-Men series with a critical eye, I'm sure I could punch so many holes in it if I wanted to, but I don't want to do that. And so I kind of want to carry that like positive childlike energy forward and just enjoy this for what it is. And so far, what it is a really fun, really vibrantly colored, fast-paced action cartoon, and it's amazing. I'm fully obsessed with it. I truly cannot wait to see, you know, what happens next. And you know, there's a few things that I'm hoping that maybe were hinted at here that I might just be reaching. But you know, something that is one of the outcomes of Magneto's trial was that the mutants are, you know, establishing Genosha as a United Nations recognized country. Mm-hmm. So that feels, you know, and there's random master molds hidden across the globe. I'm like, well, could there be another hidden somewhere? Perhaps the jungles of Ecuador and a certain bald woman in a safari hat might find it. I don't know. Like, that's where my mind is going. And like, my mind is even going so far to be like, okay, well, if, you know, Cassandra Nova does show up at the end of this, is this going to dovetail into the Deadpool and Wolverine movie? Like, I'm just, yes, I could be critical of it, but there's just so many things in it for me to love and look forward to that I just can't. I cannot be critical of this. I kind of wanted to be. I kind of thought I would be, but it really was the nostalgic joyride that I needed it to be. And I hope that it remains that.
It's a good continuation of the original series.
Yeah.
And what you said about like, it's a cartoon, and that's where like, you know, we're joking about like Hammy's opinion. And I agree, like all the things that he says are about, and like the thing about, you know, they're flying in the plane, the Sentinel, they should have saw it.
Yeah.
Yes. But also it's a cartoon. Kids are going to watch it. We can sit here and we will be, as we reviewed, be critical of these moments and make jokes about them and stuff. But to your point, I'm not watching with the same way that I would be watching a blockbuster movie where you're like, they probably should have thought about that a little bit more,
right?
Because the audience is an older demographic and, you know, will be more critical. Think of it as you're a 11-year-old kid watching this. You're gonna be like, yeah, this is awesome.
And like the old series, it's made for kids, but also for adults to enjoy.
Yeah.
There's enough in there for adults to, you know, even adults who aren't X-Men fanatics like us, there's enough there for them to enjoy if they're watching with their kids. I will say, I guess I do have one tiny critique as well from the second episode. I do think Rogue made far too many sassy cat references. I think there was like 3 in that one episode. I love You're More Nervous Than a Cat in a Room Full of Rocking Chairs from the original show. That's iconic. But I think putting 3 cat puns into, you know,
I wonder if they just Googled like Southern cat phrases and it was like the first 3 things that came up, and they're like, we're just going to use these ones.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love that Rogue is still making sassy Southern, you know, cat statements, but it was a little too much for one episode.
What do you think the cat statement she's going to make when her and Magneto get together?
Oh, meow. No.
By the way, that's one thing I wanted to say. Oh, I'm sorry. Go, Luigi.
No, never mind. No, never mind.
Uh-oh. This is going to take a turn.
I think Magneto's voice actor, by the way, was really great. And I think when we heard him in the teaser trailer or the trailer, a lot of us were like, what is that voice? But man, those speeches he gave in this episode were phenomenal. He was great. He was an awesome voice, in my opinion.
Go ahead. No. I've talked too much. You go.
What did you think of Rogue stealing the doctor's powers? I mean, I'm jumping back.
Oh, I have feels on that. I think that was wrong. I think that was very wrong. That is a liability. I hope the Xavier Trust Fund that was left for them includes like insurance and lawsuits, because if I was that doctor, I would sue.
Yeah, the insurance is your telepath going like,
okay, but
you didn't remember that. That's not how it happened. You're like, oh yeah, that this is not the droids you're looking for. Yeah.
It was not consensual. It was not consensual. It's not like Dr. Corbeau where Jean's like, I have to get your flight training. If not, we're all
okay. So if we're gonna be mad about that, then when Sunspot's in the danger room and Wolverine knocks down a teenager as a grown ass man and puts two blades next to his head, that's assault.
I mean, listen, the X-Men set their own rules. They you know, they do what they want to
do. No, because they have a waiver. If they're going into the danger room, they make you sign a waiver.
You think they did? You think you signed it away?
Well, but like, I accept. It's like when you turn on your car, your screen comes on, you're like, I accept.
I mean, listen, if that doctor wanted to sue, I would just countersue her and be like, you endangered the life of my child. I don't know. Is that a thing? Can you sue doctors?
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath. You have to help people if you're a doctor, right?
Exactly. So she had it coming.
That's fair.
She had it coming.
She had it coming.
I will say quickly about the newer voice actors. You mentioned Magneto. I do want to say how beyond like impressed I was. I think it's Ray Chase who does Cyclops. Mm-hmm. I mean, you literally wouldn't. I would not have any idea that it was not Norm Spencer returning to the role. It sounded it was just identical. Pitch perfect.
Yeah. It sounded like they were all great. I have to tell you, A-game, and you know, we know this already from X-Men animated series lore, that they didn't want cheesy cartoon voice actors. They wanted serious actors. Mm-hmm. And that translates into the series with the returning cast as well as the new cast. And I think Jennifer Hale, I mean, I've been sold on her being Jean since Marvel versus Capcom 3. And I know she did the anime and Wolverine and the X-Men. She was great in it. But for me, her performance as Jean in Marvel versus Capcom 3, I love it. And she brought that energy here, that Phoenix energy.
I'm glad. Awesome. I know how much that means to you. So I'm glad that energy, that Jean and Marvel versus Capcom energy coalesced for you.
And Luigi was Phoenix for the premiere.
I was.
What did Jennifer say about that?
She's like, who are you dressed as? Yeah.
That's fair. I guess she didn't. She wouldn't. She wasn't there recording over the footage in the 90s. Yeah. Okay. Well, fine. Her loss.
There were so many good. There were so many like great cosplayers there dressing up. It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
As we watched from a distance, Flink and I.
From a distance. Oh gosh. I. My last point is I do kind of hope that we get an episode that fills in the 9-month gap a little bit. I do think I'd like to know why Bishop came back and joined up. And, you know, we got reasons for Storm cutting her mohawk in the comics. I'm curious if there's a reason here or if it was just switch it up at the hairstylist. I don't know. I would be curious to know the answers to those questions, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think, Luigi, I think we talked about that afterwards. We were curious about why was Bishop there. In the present, that's not, because especially since in the original series he wasn't, or in the original ending, if it was Beyond Good and Evil, he would have been stranded there. So it looks like they lifted that plot point, but in the actual episodes that we saw here, they don't really give a reason as to why he's stranded.
I'm curious to see if we'll find out.
God, I was going to say something else. I was going to pull a Luigi, and I was going to say, well, X, Y, and Z. But that's going to be a next week's episode.
Too many times.
We'll cover it then when everybody's had time.
About episode 3.
Episode 3, a lot happens. Let's just say episode 3, you're gonna need a week.
Well, then stay tuned to part 2 of this episode when we do episode 3.
All right, folks. Where can everyone find you guys online? Luigi, we'll start with you.
I am Super X Luigi, not Super Luigi X.
Does somebody have that? Because if not, I'm going to rebrand myself as that.
No, I got it wrong. I want an episode. I called him like Super Luigi X.
Wow. The disrespect.
But Super X Luigi on all the socials.
Yeah, I felt like such a rock star. If I can just say, I felt like such a rock star being your arm candy for the premiere, Luigi. Like,
it was so much fun.
I had so much fun.
I couldn't have asked for a better partner for the premiere.
We're on this call. We're right here listening.
And
Blink of an Eye. Yeah.
We were pretty wretched.
You could find me at Ludvarian Lad on Instagram.
And you can find me at Flinkman on Instagram, doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
And we are at Power of X-Men on Instagram, and hit us up there, and send all of your feels on episodes 1 and 2 to Luigi, Sean, and Flinkman.